Ladies and gentlemen, ATDF everything in that shelf presentation.
You're now rocking with TDF everything. Spoiled rotten.
Spoiler alert.
Welcome back, everybody.
You thought we were gone, but nope. Here we are. In your ears again.
You can't get rid of us. Nope. It's me, Daniel.
And Ban.
On Spoiled Rotten.
On that shelf.
Boom. Hey, you know how we do this. We kind of have some news up top, and we give our own speculation on those news items.
Yep.
And then we dig into something.
Yep. And that was pretty good intro for... Yeah. Considering the fact that we were pretty rusty. Our summer was pretty eventful personal lives speaking, but from a superhero comic book universe side of things, not so much. There was, of course, the huge stuff that came out of Comic-Con, but that was so far away, a remove, that there's no point in really bringing it up.
We definitely
have some things to tickle your fancy, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just do want to point out we did actually talk about Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So it is an episode you guys...
This is my memory failing me.
Yeah. There was a rumor, again, who knows how real this is, but I thought it would just be a nice place to have a conversation, that they want to have a black Professor X and a black Magneto.
I'm into it. I love it.
What do you think? Like this idea. I've seen some people be like... No, because
they traditionally weren't, but yeah.
And then I feel like there's other people, you know, I mean, I understand their problem. They're more in the camp of no, because they're usually white, but I've seen people be like, it's just, you know, I just want the best person to be cast. It doesn't have to be minority.
Why is race an issue then? If it's the best person, it's about, if it's a meritocracy, it shouldn't be about race at all then. Casting a black person, if they were best auditioned for that role, then their point is moot.
Here is what I like about a black Magneto and a black Professor X. Although, for me, the Professor X part doesn't really matter. The black Magneto for me works... Because when they made X-Men, that was close enough to...
World War II.
Yes. So that him being Jewish was important, because that layers in a bunch of different seething anger. Mm-hmm. And I think they do a good job of bringing that out in the movies as well, when he's like, I've already got my tattoo. I've already got my number. I'm not going to do that. And just... Or even in First Class when... Mm-hmm. Someone's like, well, I was just following orders, and like the way Michael Fassbender plays that of like, yeah, I know people who've just followed orders before.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to diminish the Holocaust. That's a serious thing. But the people that would feel it unless you change it to like, I feel like even at like a kid who was there would still be a bit older on the spectrum if you wanted to start working with a certain age group.
Yeah.
You would... The black choice makes sense because that frustration, especially in the States, is very and obviously it's still happening.
And
So the parallel still works there.
I agree, and I've thought about this heavily when I heard that rumor too, like a black Magneto and a black Professor Xavier. I'm like, a black Magneto would work so well, because from the perspective of and just for full disclosure, we are not comparing the Holocaust to anything here.
No.
But what I am looking at is the timeline that the MCU exists in.
Yes.
That we're now having to tell stories post 2023 based on the Endgame kind of standpoint. So we're going ahead in time now to tell the stories.
Exactly.
And then we're also having some movies to fill in the gaps, like Black Widow and all that kind of stuff, to bring us to that point in time. We don't know what the Disney movies are going to do to bring us to 2023, but that's what we're going to do. When you take that into consideration and you're introducing the X-Men, you have the job of introducing the X-Men in a way where it has to follow that timeline. And from the World War II timeline to now, you don't have a Magneto anymore, because of the fact that he should be dead.
But he would be
he'd be like 90 something.
Yeah, like he'd be old.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I know they keep saying Denzel Washington.
Yes.
He might be too old as well. I mean, visually, I think it works because Denzel still looks young enough.
I agree.
I mean, maybe. I actually don't know if he's younger than Ian McKellen was when he started.
Yeah, that I'm not too sure about. But it could definitely work. Ian McKellen looks older than Denzel, regardless of what the age is, just because of the white hair.
Yes, but I mean, obviously I would love if Denzel Washington. I don't think he would ever, because I feel like they've asked him to do a bunch of things. And he's like, No, thank you. Because I think the only thing he's ever said he would do that's like a franchise thing is James Bond. He's like, I would do James Bond.
Oh, yeah. I respect him.
He's
for
like,
that.
I'm not doing your like John Stewart Green Lantern. I'm not doing this. Like, he's like, I would do James Bond, though.
Cool.
And I'm like, all right, fair enough.
Yeah. Bit too old for James Bond now, but I mean,
yeah, yeah.
I would he love that back in the day.
You didn't say that. Like,
Denzel would have been great as Bond, for sure. But I completely agree with you that the continued oppression that the black community still faces in North America has great storytelling potential.
Yeah. For why you would feel that. The way... Because that's what's good about... That's the conflict with Magneto that makes him more interesting and more nuanced is that by all means, he should be like, well, I'm not going to like do to the Jewish, my Jewish brothers, what Nazis did. But he's like, but if you're human, then I'm going to get you back for treating mutants. Like
the other thing I thought would be really, really interesting too, is if Professor Xavier was a mixed race person. So half black, half white, therefore having a little bit of privilege that doesn't get acknowledged by Magneto, but still recognized as black by the white community. I think that racial nuance would be really, really interesting because it really, really hinges on how they explore Shang-Chi. Because to me, if they do Shang-Chi properly, like the way I was telling you about, and I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast, but if they did Shang-Chi in a way where he's a modern day Asian male walking around with the name Shang-Chi because whether or not he immigrated to North America or whatever, the fish out of water thing, if they address that angle of the Asian point of view, I think that would be amazing for them to explore in that movie. And I would get really, really on board with it. And with the X-Men side of things, I think that racial nuance with mixed race people, I think that would be pretty, pretty amazing to explore as well.
What I heard was it was Giancarlo Esposito, who's Gus on Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw a casting rumor of that. That would be really, really interesting.
I mean, not visibly mixed race, but I believe that's like Afro-Latino.
Yes.
So, yes, he does have a mix there, but obviously... Yep.
But not
one
like
is
white
treated
black,
better
yeah,
in America.
Yeah, that's like Hispanic and black together. The Miles Morales kind of thing, right?
Yes. But I also saw that he might have been Norman Osborn, which would have been cool as well.
That would have been really, really cool.
And that would be a case of best person for the job because that guy is like the smooth guy in pub. Well, if you're basing it off of Gus, like,
yes.
Got that public persona that everyone trusts. And then look what he's doing behind the scenes.
Correct.
I mean, I would also be fine if he was Professor X. I mean, I'm not going to begrudge him getting work. If he wanted to do it and they wanted him to do it, then fine. But I thought that was interesting. Just wanted to know what your thoughts were. I didn't think it would be any different than what you said.
No, I love the idea because I think it's so much more relevant to what we're dealing with now. Just like kind of like how Captain Marvel like was. It's a relevant thing to a now kind of situation. The X-Men could be brought in that. And to the people that comment, like, Professor Xavier and Magneto should be white. Okay, let's really take in consideration into really thinking about what the X-Men comics stand for, and that was the civil rights movement. So they were metaphors for black people to begin with. Professor X, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and
is Martin Luther King. Magneto would be Malcolm X.
Yes.
Yeah, on a very basic
on the level. Meta level.
Yes.
So it's just like, arguably, what we could say is that the comics whitewashed those people, which whether or not they're inspired for, but like that's the controversy there. So when people are like, "Oh, they should be white," I'm like, "Shut up! No, they're based off black people. So why wouldn't they be black? I don't care."
Like, as I've always said, there's one character that I can always think of off the top of my head that should remain white if they're doing the character properly, which is Bruce Wayne.
Yes.
I'm not saying Batman, but Bruce Wayne.
Bruce Wayne. You've made a good argument for why that person should
stay with. I'm not saying he's the only one. I'm saying that's one that when I think about it, it makes sense.
Because the backstory doesn't make sense.
Like, it's not like he just is like rich because his parents were rich. It's like his family like started Gotham.
Yes.
It's like that. There is...
When you're talking about...
There would be nobody... Yeah. There would be no other ethnicity in...
North America that would be able to build
like that would have that kind of history. Correct. And so, and I've heard other people talk about the guilt that would give him as well, and that burden he would carry on top of, I got to avenge my parents or whatever. But just knowing that, like, he has that kind of connection to the city
and that privilege and all that kind of stuff, it's still
been him in the ass, and that he could have done, or that he wants to make sure that doesn't happen again. I feel like that's why I say when Bruce Wayne, not Batman. There could be another character that becomes Batman. There have been other characters that become Batman. I'm just saying, Bruce Wayne, if you're casting him, if it's going to be a white guy, I'm not going to be like, come on, what about Idris as Bruce Wayne? I feel like then you are just like, well, let's see how it goes if we race Batman.
I agree. Like, if they casted, like, oh God, I don't know, like in Asian, like if they put Tony Leung as Bruce Wayne, I'd be like, what the hell are you doing? You because don't know the backstory behind this.
And like, I say all that to say that, like, a part of Batman's conflict is the privilege that he acknowledges in himself, which again wouldn't feel genuine if it were someone else.
I 100% agree, because I'll speak to the Chinese community in this regard too, that if a Chinese family has privilege, there's no guilt about that. There's only pride and, like, no, we earned this. We're better than everyone. Yeah. We are not going to feel guilt about that. Bruce does have guilt over that. He, like, he plays the part very, very well. And then he does the Batman stuff very, very well, too. So that's a character that inherently is white. The character of Bruce Wayne specifically.
Yes.
Not Batman. I 100% agree with you on that, based on the backstory. Now, Terry McGinnis, Batman Beyond, could be anything. Yeah. I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Dick Grayson could be anything.
Exactly.
It's
Dick Grayson being Asian makes much more sense to me.
Although,
except for the last
I think
name.
They say that the Graysons are also part of Gotham, so depending on who you read.
Yeah.
It's like,
depending on what. Yeah.
It's like the Waynes, the Cobblepots for sure. Sometimes Graysons are like a level under that or something. Right. Anyway, the point is Dick Grayson doesn't feel that guilt or that kind of.
Yes.
That's not on him. So you could. You could do stuff with that. Anyway, let's move on to Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a movie coming out.
Yeah.
So I heard someone be very upset that they said that Robert Downey Jr. might be in it.
Why are they that upset?
I hate to say it this way. I just feel like people, I think everyone always knows this, people like to be upset about things. So this person was incensed.
Well, you're absolutely right.
This person was incensed that, because if I see him, then it undoes his death. I'm like, but this movie doesn't take place after Endgame.
Yeah.
And the person he was on the podcast with was like, it's a prequel. It's like, but if you see him alive after, she's like, but do you not understand how, like, she's like, you know that, like, Uncle Ben is dead, right? But you keep seeing him. And he's like, it's different. It's different.
No,
I'm like,
it's not.
No.
No, it's like, not at all.
Interesting choice, but also, I guess, if you're going to do this, it's the two dead characters from Endgame in one movie.
Correct.
But, like, I mean, obviously, I'm thinking more like, oh, so not Chris Evans, because that makes more sense.
That would have made a little bit more sense.
But if it is just him being like, we're going to find you, Nat, and then her being like, oh, I got to really hide, like, super good now,
because
Tony's going to find me. Because it's in between Civil War and Infinity War. Or no, it's
years.
In between.
Yeah, between Civil War and Infinity War,
Right. Yeah. It leads up to
Infinity. Parts of it.
It and will then explain why she looks the way she does in Infinity War, something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, the white hair?
There's that and the green suit she's wearing. There's like the
white hair explanation.
The green suit she's wearing seems like it might be from her sister figure, and you know the one, Florence
Yelena?
Pugh. Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
I don't know which. I don't know which one Rachel Weisz.
I remember
in terms of the character name.
Yeah, I remember.
It's
the,
Black Widow 2. Anyway, people have seen footage where Black Widow 2 is basically wearing that suit.
Yep.
Basically, that exact look.
Sure.
In the clip they see.
Right.
So that might be some kind of homage or something like that. Anyway, the point is, sure, if he's in it, fine. I don't really care. No. I also understand that it takes place before Endgame, so yes. It makes no sense to me that you would be like, but then it's like he's not dead. Yeah, he is. He's dead. Fine.
No, he dead.
All right, great.
All right.
Let's talk about our 15 favorite comic book movies.
So here's the thing. We didn't actually tell you what we were doing today because we're obviously not reviewing anything. The next episode will be The Joker. But Dan had this great idea to review. What's that?
Daniel
had a great idea to review the top 15 superhero movies.
Well, our favorite. I want to make a point. It's not what we think are objectively the best. This is our favorite.
Yes, this is objectively our favorite.
So if this is your first episode, you're going to get a little insight into our minds of what we like in a comic book movie.
Yeah.
And yes, we did it before 2008 because I feel like then, if you know anything about us, the
Dark
pretty
Knight
close
Rises,
to the top would be Dark Knight.
Dark Knight is going to be
certainly
number
not
one.
Dark Knight Rises.
But Dark Knight Rises, not Dark Knight Rises.
But Dark Knight would be like within the one or two spot, and then a bunch of Marvel movies would fill out the rest.
Yeah,
of it.
Because we like you made a good point of we wanted that was thing, but also that we wanted to see what the state of comic book movies and superhero movies themselves were before the MCU changed the game entirely.
Yeah. Thank you for credit for that. I don't remember ever saying that. You're making me sound smart.
No. You didn't need to say it. I was just like, oh my God, this is brilliant because, yeah, the MCU, that Iron Man thing, that one post-credit scene just changed everything. When Nick Fury correct. Stepped on, I was like, oh my God, this changed everything. So, without further ado, we did top 15.
Mm-hmm.
Why 15? Out of curiosity.
Just because that's what I said. So okay. Let's do 15.
All right. Who do you want to go first?
I'll go first.
Cool. Number 15.
This sounds like a joke, but it's seriously an independent film from 1990 from Image and Mirage Comics. Can you guess what it is?
I've got no clue.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
What a fantastic film. I just rewatched it yesterday. Mm. I just like the Ninja Turtles. I didn't really care for the rebooted stuff in 2014 and 2016. But, I like those first two Turtle movies from the 90s. I obviously liked the cartoon. I'm not going to stand up for the cartoon. Like, when I was a kid, I liked it, but I don't really. But I will stand up for this first Ninja Turtle movie. I feel like now that I'm more of an adult, I rewatch it. I'm like, I guess they are just joking around a lot.
Yeah.
But there's still some heavy stuff with, like, Splinter's death and or proposed death and then Raphael being beat within an inch of his life.
Mm.
There's some emotional stuff going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I did not like, though, Casey Jones is horribly homophobic in that
film. Yes, he is.
He really... At one point, the guy says, I think it's Donatello's, like, you're claustrophobic. And he's like, I never even looked at another man. I'm like, does he not know what homophobic means? Like, that wouldn't mean that would be exactly what happens.
Yeah, and let's remember these things are dated, and our love of these movies is obviously exempt from that.
No, I completely co-sign what Casey Jones is. Don't even look at another man. I'm closing my eyes as I talk at you right now.
Yes. So we're not condoning that, is what we say.
No, it's stupid. I don't like it. Which is why we're calling it. Ruin a lot of it for me because I thought April was amazing in that movie.
April was great in that movie.
Like, she's funny.
Yeah.
There's like that scene where the foot come to like beat her up and tell her to stop running her mouth. And I feel like in other movies, namely the movie that I have at my number one, she would have been screaming and be like, oh my God, help. But she makes a joke and then tries to fight them. And I'm like, nice. I like that.
Gotcha.
And then she takes control in the Casey Jones love thing where she's like, just shut up and kiss me already. I got some work to do.
Yeah,
I'm like, good for you, April. Like,
yeah.
You get your stuff in where you want it and then go off and do your job.
There was definitely a lot of feminism in her character, and I love that a lot.
And then I was really disappointed to hear that she hated the movie, and that's why she's not in 2-3.
That's fair.
No, she was so good, though. I really
liked was good.
Judith Hogue as April O'Neil.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my 15.
Really? Not Megan Fox?
No, that was so stupid. Not like
that. My 15 is a movie by the name of Orgasmo.
Okay.
Yeah. this.
Oh, that's the South Park people.
That's the Trey Parker, Matt Stone people.
Yes.
I love this movie. There is actually an Orgasmo comic. It's fucking hilarious. And when they adapted this, it just like everything about this movie is just so funny. It's so ridiculous. There's a lot of like Trey Parker, Matt Stone level comedy, so take it with a grain of salt and everything like that. There's but it's just such a funny movie.
I feel like there's that guy that's always like, Kia! That guy that they, or there's one guy with like a dildo for a thing. He's got like, yeah. You keep talking. I really wanted to say something about that. But
no, yeah. this movie is, oh God, it didn't make nearly enough money, but it's so funny. It is the minds of Trey Parker, and Matt Stone. The premise of a Mormon being a porn star, acting in a porn star because he knows a little bit of kung fu, it's just to raise money for his wedding is the funniest thing in the world. It's just, it's ridiculous.
To be honest with you, I never actually saw the full thing.
No? It's so ridiculous. It's over the top. It's funny. But this is like one of those stoner comedies that I love that a lot of people will be like, why do you love this? But it's totally to me a stoner comedy. Well, not actually being a stoner comedy because nothing about this movie is about pot. But I'm usually stoned when watching it. So I really enjoyed this movie. Had a lot of good times with it.
That's what I wanted to say. The guy who plays Chota Boy,
yes,
is who they base Butters off of.
Yes.
Or I guess he's supposed to be like that.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's good fun.
Yeah, I can't join in on the fun. I do not remember that movie. That's fine. I've seen like the first 10 minutes and I was like, watch some South Park.
Yeah.
My 14. I want to say before I mention this, I'm aware of stuff like Mask of the Phantasm. I just didn't put it in because I feel like it didn't really get like a theatrical release here in Toronto. I'm sure it
didn't.
Did. Maybe it did, but I don't remember.
I remember it having a short theatrical release. But
yeah. Anyway, I'm aware of how good it is. It's not in my list. No.
No.
It's
oh,
not
really?
On my list. No cartoon is on my list, I don't think. I just made a decision. So that isn't to say they're not good. It's just I decided not to do that. Number 14 is a 2005 film from Vertigo, DC, V for Vendetta.
Ooh.
That's a good one. What's his name again?
Hugo Weaving?
That's the one. Yep. Hugo Weaving.
And Natalie Portman.
Sure. She's in it.
Yep. She did the, she committed to that role. She shaved her head. That was a wonderful movie.
He is good in it.
He's fantastic in that movie.
Really, like, I like the beginning of it a lot. That's pretty much where it gets all of my goodwill. And then they really, you know, make you work for it in the middle section where I'm kind of like, yeah.
Where Evie's all like being manipulated by.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't like that part?
It's not the concept. It's just the execution.
Gotcha.
Where I was just like, meh. But V is a great character.
Yes.
I'm really into V as a character.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm all in on V for Vendetta. I feel like when I remembered it, I also rewatched it for this. I remembered Evie having a lot more to do near the end, but she kind of just like, yeah, he's dead and he's great and I'm going to set this bomb off now. Do you like music?
Because V for Vendetta appears on my list, but much, much later.
Yes.
I'll talk about it now since we're both talking about it.
No, you can save your stuff for V for Vendetta.
But to me, that was magical, that moment of like, you say she didn't do much, but honestly, it was the idea that she started the rebellion. She started that whole revolution of Guy Fawkes masks and everything like that, standing up to the government. It was one act of defiance, right? And that was the whole point. She represented that, and I thought that was beautifully executed. And the fact that V recognized, like, I can't be that person. There's too much hate and everything like that. If I start that revolution, it'll be something born out of impurity and something out of hate and rage and everything like that. I have to set up the catalyst, but it has to be someone that's pure in order to make that decision whether or not this is the direction that our society should go in. And when she does, and like, that was the coolest thing. It was
absolutely
fantastic.
Would like it if it was more her thing instead of what actually feels like happens in the execution of like everything you said. It's all like set up by him. She's manipulated the whole time. And then I guess, yes, because she never gives him up and never really turns sour. He's like, oh, good, you're pure of heart or whatever. But like, it never feels like that's where she was going to get. Had she not been like manipulated by him. And then even in that act, it still feels passive. I know she still sets everything off, but it still feels like a passive, like, I guess I'll go through with this because I like him so much. I want to honor what he started.
I did not get that. I got it totally. I was just like, nope. And this comes back to the Notorious movie. That line that he says in dialogue where he's like, in order to change the world, we have to change ourselves. She was reluctant to change anything. Mm-hmm. But she was put, there were so many things that were put in front of her that forced her to change. The idea that Stephen Fry's character had the Quran and everything like that. It's like, oh my God, this is forbidden, all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, she was presented with the opportunity to change her perspective, never did. And then brought in with V, and what V did was just basically like, nope, here's the thing that was holding you back. Let's remove that. Let's give you strength. Let's give you character. Let's do all those kind of things. And then you still have that purity. He saw that in her to be like, nope, I can put you through this ringer and you'll still have you at the end of the day. I thought that was beautiful.
I feel like she's fundamentally not her, though. Mm. At the end, she's a product of what V did to her.
I think she had the decision.
Everything
to
you
do
just
it,
said is proving that thesis, because everything you're saying is she needed to change. But she needed to change, and then she went in with V, and he removed a bunch of stuff from her,
yes,
and kept a part that he liked about her. Yep. But everything else about her is changed.
I don't know.
He liked the earnesty or whatever she has, I guess. I don't know.
I liked it a lot.
But, like, yeah. Anyway, you'll have your time to...
Yep. Well, my 14 is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's low on the list because, honestly, I do like that. I like the Ninja Turtles, but the movies themselves never really, really caught me. They never did.
That first one really caught me.
That first one didn't get me like that. I really never really appreciate. Like, I like the new iterations of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles because I'm like, the CGI versions to me is much, much more fun. I'm not saying I like the Michael Bay stuff, but to me, visually, it looks better.
I hate it.
Really?
It looks like an abomination. I hate it.
Oh, I love it. Because I'm just like, no, they're mutants. So, you know, like the mutation, they all should look different. And the new ones, they do. And the old ones are like, you're wearing the same thing with different colors of whatever. It's weird to me. I'm just like,
I absolutely hate the way they look. I absolutely hate it.
Now, to be clear, I'm talking about the CGI, not Michael Bay CGI one. Just TMMT, the fully CGI.
I thought you were talking...
Not the Michael Bay one.
I thought you were saying you just didn't like the movies, but you like the look of what...
No, I like... So, you know, in between there was that one...
Yeah, the 2007 movie.
Yeah, I love that one. That was awesome.
Is that the one on your list?
Yeah. Oh, that was 2000... Yeah, I'm going to change it now because I didn't like the...
Okay. It's the 2007
one. It's the 2007 one. Yeah. I like that way way better.
Yeah, it's got a lot more Kevin Smith in it.
Yes, it does. That one was great. I wish they continued doing that, and I really hated
it. It is a continuation of the other ones, though.
It is. Because
at the end, when he goes, they've got the fucking Shredder mask and the time thing from the third one.
Mm-hmm. And I loved it. It was great.
I didn't think I would like it, but I really liked when Leonardo and Raphael fought.
Yeah.
I was like, good. I'm glad they got that out of the way.
Yeah.
I don't like that Raphael won, but I like that, like, initially Leonardo was winning. I'm like, good, put him in his place. Mm-hmm. That fucker's always trying to mess things up. But then Raphael won.
Yep.
But I thought that was really well played out. Yes. And
so, to be clear, this 2007 TMNT.
Okay.
That's the one.
I was really worried that you wouldn't be able to because they're past the period.
Yeah.
But I felt like you were like, I'll just put on the 1991 because I actually like the 2014 one.
No.
You're saying
that's an abomination.
Okay. I don't have a problem with the 2007 look. And it's got Chris Evans in it, so that's nice.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
A less homophobic Casey Jones.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's nice.
A good.
And who is it? Sarah Michelle Gellar is April?
Yes.
They're not like
Buffy.
Yeah, they are not like the characters, but like it doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
they're just, it's just fun to have them there.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it.
Patrick Stewart's the villain, or kind of the villain. He's taken over by demons or something.
Yeah,
it's an interesting thing. Not on my list. I don't even think it would have been on, even if I was putting cartoons. But yeah,
fair enough.
I am happy to report that I take back all the I keep the negativity for the 2014
the Michael Bay stuff. Yeah, about the Michael Bay ones, for sure.
They're not directed by him, so I don't want to like give him all the credit on that.
Well, produced by or yeah, whatever. It's heavily his influence in those movies. For sure.
I mean, it's his money for sure.
Yes.
I don't know that he cares about the.
Yeah, you're probably right. The about turtles. That. No, he cared more about the Megan Fox casting.
And even that's weird because he was like, "I'm not casting you again because you called me Hitler."
Yeah. For him to do that again was weird, and then for her to drop off the face of the planet was weird too. But all right. Whatever.
Here we go. My 13. It's a 1990 film again. What a great year that was.
Shit, you're doing years, eh?
Yeah. Some of these things. It's a comic strip, so I can only say the author of the comic strip, Chester Gould. It's good old Dick Tracy, baby. Yeah. Pew, pew, pew. Love it. I mean, obviously, I don't love it more than the other 12 movies I'm going to mention. But we're talking about a top 15 here in terms of my favorite movies that are comic book related. And I don't know why. Like, there's no one really for me to hang on to. I guess there's the orphan kid.
Mm-hmm.
But even as a kid, I was kind of like, yeah, whatever. Like, Dick Tracy, man. Like, this guy's cool. I like, and he's got so many cool villains. And I like, it was directed by Warren Beatty, who stars as Dick Tracy. And he was just like, no, I'm not going to try and, like, get a sequel. I'm just going to be like, no, let's just put all the villains I like in one movie. And he did it. It worked.
That's awesome.
They're all there. I don't know if they're all there. But there's, like, 20 villains. So, and like, you never are like, what's going on here? That's too many. He did a good job of being like, no, I just want to get the whole Rogues Gallery in there, or all the ones he cares about.
Yep.
They're there. Al Pacino's the main villain. And you're never like, oh, but it doesn't get enough screen time. Even Madonna's kind of a villain.
Mm-hmm.
What's her name? Voiceless or something.
Sure. Can't say that I've ever actually seen that movie, though.
Great film.
Yeah.
I mean, it came out right after Batman, so you can see the influence down to like the Danny Elfman soundtrack and just the way they put it together. But like, visually, it's amazing to look at, and you know, you get the benefit of having Madonna on your soundtrack and doing some stuff there. It's a good time at the movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's dated things in there that aren't really. That wouldn't pass a bunch of tests now.
Right.
But, I mean, it has the benefit of being like, well, this is from the 30s. Gotcha. So,
yeah, that's true.
It's got that going for it.
Yeah. My number 13 is a 1997 film produced by New Line Cinema. And that is Spawn.
Nice.
I love that movie. I know it doesn't get, critics hate it. It usually gets shit on quite a bit. But when I was that young watching that movie, the effects, the graphics, the whole movie, it was like, oh my God, this is an adult superhero thing.
Yeah,
it was like really cool to me at that age.
It definitely had that effect on me. I was like, whoa, we're really going for it in this movie. Yeah, I found the clown to be particularly like, I rewatch it now. I'm like, I guess he's not, like, he is saying some fucked up things, but he's not.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
As a kid, I was like, oh my God, can you say things like that? Like, oh, he's really going for it.
Yeah.
And
it was John Leguizamo, which is one of one of my better favorite roles of what he's done. But I've always been a big fan of
Luigi.
Luigi.
I'm kidding.
Big fan of Michael Jai White. And yeah, this whole was just so cool. It made me feel like I was 11. And I watched that movie, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so badass. This is such a cool movie. It's a cool premise.
I did get to see that in theaters.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So I was like, yep, this is awesome. I love that movie. Like I said, critically, it's not that great. Like, it's 5.3 on IMDb and 18% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't care. I still love that movie.
Yeah, we're not here to talk about what we think is, like, the best cinema that everyone should watch. This is what we
this
like.
This is purely superhero or comic book stuff.
There's that's no been wrong adopted to the big here. Screen.
Yep, this is what I like.
And also, I just wanted to point out, it is Image Comics.
Yes, it is.
Just like, well, Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
I like that movie. It wasn't on my list. Yeah. It's
the other thing I really like about that character in general, Spawn in general, is the idea that, yes, you have all these godlike powers and everything like that, but there's a limit to how much you can use them. I thought that is one of the coolest parts about Spawn.
The movie, I feel like,
didn't really get into that.
What they did was the limitation of just like he doesn't want to work for the devil,
yes.
and that is exactly what he has to do in this movie. So I thought that was still an interesting way to go.
Yep.
But yeah, I feel like when I rewatched it, it doesn't really hold up. And I know what they were trying to do, but there's always those scenes where he goes back into hell and
it doesn't
the
really,
mouth doesn't sync up. But I heard what was supposed to be going on there, but I don't remember what it was.
Right.
I think the idea was just that it was a mental link, so that beast isn't actually talking to him verbally. It's all mental.
Yep.
And he may as well have just been going like ha 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 like while he was down there.
Mm-hmm.
But it still was like, this looks weird.
Yeah.
But it is a well put together Spawn film.
Yep. It's definitely a good Spawn film. All right. Number 12.
It's a 1978 film of a DC character.
Oh dear.
Yeah. I think we all know where I'm going with this. It's my friend Superman.
That didn't even make my list.
I didn't think it would.
No.
If we're talking about like milestones, obviously, the tagline for this movie was "You'll believe a man can fly." And when I watched it, I was like, if I compare this to other stuff that came out, yeah, I guess it looks like he can fly. Like that's
around that era.
Like,
yeah.
I was like, well done. And I know, I mean, this is my Christopher Nolan fanboy stuff coming through, but when he talked about doing Batman, he was like, well, I want to do it like Superman, where like every role is someone like noteworthy. And I like that. I mean, they had Marlon Brando in it, obviously. And like just that every actor in the movie for that time was somebody that you weren't just like, I guess they're just gonna get whoever to fill out this cast. It was like, oh shit, they got this person. Oh, and we can see how that happens now in like Marvel movies, like when we talked about the Eternals cast, that was like a, oh shit. Like, and that's just that cast. Like, I'm sure when we start seeing like who's going to fill out the supporting characters, that you'll feel that way again.
Right.
And I kind of like that it started that, like, it kind of was like, we're trying to take comic book movies seriously right now. Like, even to the point of, even if it was just, we're going to rest our hat on, you're going to believe this guy can fly. We're not going to just be like, isn't it funny that he flies in tights? They were like, no, we want the audience to like buy into this. I appreciate that the effort was put into that. And while I think that like they might spend a bit too much time with young Superman at the beginning, once he becomes Superman, the movie, like, I mean, before that and after that period.
Would you say the movie takes off?
No, I wouldn't.
Yes.
But yeah, that's my number 12.
Gotcha.
Superman.
My number 12 is a 1994 movie starring Jim Carrey.
Yeah, The Mask. I was going to say.
Mask.
Shit, I want. That's what should have been my 14.
Oh my God. Fuck The Mask is Vendetta. Such a great movie. So good. Yeah, I mean, like, that's the peak of, like,
the
Jim Carrey.
The original
Loki. Yeah. That's the peak of Jim Carrey at his best.
Because that's, like...
So good.
He does that and Dumb and Dumber in the same
year. Same year. And Ace Ventura, too.
Ace Ventura 2 or 1? One, I think
it was. But, like, he had, like, the three biggest movies out in the same year. And it was, all, like, everything was him. And we were like, he's from Toronto? This is the coolest thing. Or, like, he lived in Toronto at some point.
I think he's, like, from Newmarket or something like that. This is a Dark Horse comic. Just in case people wanted to know.
Absolutely.
What they could read later.
Fantastically fun movie. I just remember being a kid around 1994 and the entire school just being like,
somebody
quoting.
Stop me.
Yeah, we were just quoting from that movie the entire time. It was fun. Loved it.
I feel like it's probably, I did not read the comics, but I get the sense that it was like The Mask in name only.
Yeah. That's what I've heard.
I get the sense that he is not kid friendly at all.
Yes,
but
the DC version.
But still a great film.
Yep.
I regret not putting it on mine. I'll stick to my list, but I should have put them in.
Gotcha.
11. That's what we're on, right?
Yes, we are.
1998 film.
Yep.
From Marvel. It's our great friend, Blade.
Ooh, yeah.
Great film.
Love that film.
Blade's I was awesome on the season finale of the Master Race Debaters talking about this film, and just like, it's, I know when people were like, oh, you know, Black Panther's the first black superhero, and everyone's like, no, Blade. That, I understand what people mean when they say Black Panther's the first black superhero. The Blade stuff is, I mean, they do at the beginning of the movie make sure that you see on his mom's certificate in New York that it says she's a Negro. But like, it's pretty much where it ends. It's just like, yeah, he's black. It's not, it didn't get into like what it would be like for him to be black and doing the things he's doing.
Yep.
That did not play into it really at all. Mm-hmm. Other than at one point, the bad guy calls him an Uncle Tom and also Bright Boy. But other than that, it's not a real element of Blade. You wouldn't, based on that movie, be able to make a good argument of, no, Blade needs to be black.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you would be able to do that with Black Panther.
Mm.
Almost everything about that character is seeped in being black with privilege and then having to deal with what it's like for the other black people that don't have the privilege he has.
Correct.
So that's, I appreciate that Blade was there because I don't think we get Black Panther on the platform we do without something like Blade.
Yes.
But I understand what people mean when they say Black Panther's the first black superhero in that sense, like of like it actually meaning something that he's black.
Mm. Oh, so that's why you quantify. Okay, I see. Because like we've had this discussion multiple times. I'm like, dude, Blade, what are you talking about? Like,
no, I don't think it counts. I don't think
that's where that counts. Point comes across. I see.
I'm happy that it happened, obviously.
Yes.
And I love Blade, obviously. Mm-hmm. But especially like there's scenes where he like beats up a cop in broad daylight and like shoves him in his trunk, and you're like,
that would never happen.
Yeah. I mean, no one would be able to get away with that. But certainly a black person wouldn't be able to get away with that and have people just be like, whatever.
Yep.
Probably a good reason for that. Right. But I mean, still fun to watch Wesley Snipes do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like 3, but...
Oh, yeah. Not a lot of people like 3.
And I get...
I mean,
I just
3 had moments,
one thing,
but...
I just want to say one thing. I get that if you were working on that set, you might feel a way about it, but I don't like when other people who weren't on that set chime in like, I heard he was a real dick on that set. And it's like, yeah, like he had his own franchise, and then they were like, you know what would be good? If we brought in 2 white people to be the stars of your franchise.
Yeah.
I understand that frustration, and I don't think it's fair to completely paint him as like this belligerent child when it's like, well, yeah, like you're literally taking this away from him by being like, nah, nah, nah.
That's his final
Seventh Heaven woman and Ryan Reynolds. They're the stars of this movie.
Yeah.
No,
I completely agree with his perspective. Like when I heard it back then, I'm like, oh, why can't everyone just get along? I'm like, oh, no, wait. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, sure, whatever. You can be like, well, he should have dealt with it differently, but like, he's probably stuck there. Like, I'm sure there's an element of like...
I mean, would you deal with it differently if that was the last film in your contract and you were just getting paid no matter what?
I don't think it's that. I think it would be a legitimate thing that he loves that character. And so, like, to actually feel... Like, it's like what Andrew Garfield says about Spider-Man. Like, the way they, like, ripped that character away from him as well. And he was like, this doesn't... feel right. Like, I actually care about Spider-Man. Yeah. I love Spider-Man.
He was depressed after that.
Yeah, and like, this is what we're doing.
A big thing of depression after
that. And I can see someone who's like, I already proved for 2 movies you can just deal with me. Like, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah.
I understand the frustation there. I don't like that. Like, whatever Patton Oswalt can do his jokes, because he was probably on set and that probably would fuck with his day and make him feel tense. But then when other people are like, you know what Patton Oswalt said? Yeah, what a dick. Oh, I can't believe Wesley said. I'm like, shut up.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my 11. Blade, great. As I said, an important building block to getting to Black Panther. I'm not trying to diminish that.
Yep.
And I even liked his, I don't know if it's fair to call her a sidekick, but the doctor character.
What's
she
that?
Was, no, no. No.
Or the Blade One.
Yeah, because I don't know if she's...
Whistler was there too, but...
No, I know. I don't even know how to pronounce her name. I said that on the other podcast, but the character's name is Karen. She's a doctor, and yes. He has to suck her blood at the end. I feel like that's the only time where I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
He literally has to drain her life. But, like, other than that, I was like, she, like, gets out of her own issues. She makes her own, like, cure for herself.
Yep.
She's, again, kind of like April O'Neil. I like that she wasn't like, oh, what's going on? Oh, no, no. She was just like, all right, this is the situation, and this is how I'm going to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
Blade makes an appearance on my list a little bit later, obviously, because I love that movie. But the one thing I want to add on to this right now is that first scene in that club with that blood party.
Yeah, awesome.
Oh, my God. That just pulled me in right away. I'm like, holy shit. And then the whole room just, like just... He killed everyone. I'm like, this is nuts.
He's so cool in that role.
I love it.
Again, why so you cool. would want to diminish his screen time based on how cool he is when he's doing that role?
I have is no beyond idea. Me. Yeah, when people put it that way, I'm like, yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. The other thing I really really liked about that, I don't know if it happens Blade One or Blade, but like the idea that I'm like, hey, that makes a lot of sense logistically. If a vampire went out and was completely covered head to toe with no UV being able to hit their skin, they'd be able to walk around during the daylight. Because that one scene where they have like the motorcycle helmets on, they're all geared up and everything like that, and just they kind of kill that other vampire that betrays them. I'm like, that's legit awesome, because they like went further to be like, no, we're gonna neuter you, like pull out the teeth. And then we're going to kill you as well.
I like the Deacon Frostgate. And that was another thing, because they were vampires that were turned.
Yes.
And the one that they neutered was a vampire that was born a vampire. So he was kind of like, you're mutts to me.
Yeah.
You're not as important. And they wanted their places. I liked him as a villain because he's pretty, like, when I say cool, I mean like calm.
Yeah.
For most of the movie. He doesn't really like have like a blow up moment, so like it kind of makes him more menacing. That you're like, wait,
it makes it so much more menacing. When
why is he okay with all this stuff happening? Like, I don't like this. I feel uneasy about. I really like Blade.
Yeah, Blade is awesome. So good. My 11 is Batman: Mask of the Phantasm.
Yes,
that movie was sick. It was so good.
It's too adult for kids, because I saw it as a kid and I was like, for kids. This fucking sucks.
Yeah, I had, like, when I watched that movie, I was just like, I thought I was just going to get another episode of Batman the Animated Series. But I was like, whoa, blown away by it. And then the other thing, too, was like, I think that was the first time that I legitimately saw a woman be a villain. And that was so cool to me. Because that actually shocked me.
You didn't see it
me.
Coming. You're like, I didn't see it coming. But she's got a man voice.
Yeah. No, I didn't see any of that coming. And when they unmasked, I was like, oh, holy shit. Like that.
And
actually,
it's his true love.
Yeah. Yeah. That caught me off guard. I'm like, what the hell? This is sick. It was so good. And like watching that in the theaters, I was like, we're going to get an hour and a half episode of Batman the Animated Series.
I definitely didn't see it in theaters.
And then, I remember watching that at the old Eaton Center theater.
Oh, what a
$2
thing!
Yeah, I remember where that Joey's the Joey restaurant is now. Yeah. Holy, that was old school.
You don't have
man.
To ask me if I remember.
Old school
I know
Toronto days. Love
I know
it.
Eaton Center.
Yep.
Okay. Number 10.
Breaking the top 10, baby.
This is a 2002 film, Paradox in DC Comics. Road to Perdition. That's right. What Tom Hanks in a comic book movie. And the kid that now plays Superman in Supergirl, Tyler Hoechlin or whatever the fuck
you
say. Jude Law is in it. Daniel Craig is in it. It's fucking sick.
Yep.
So Road to Perdition, if you don't know, is about a assassin or a hitman for the mob. And one day his son, like an idiot, watches him perform a hit, and his boss sees it and is like, we're obviously gonna have to kill your kid now. And he's like, oh no, how about just don't. And they're like, we're gonna kill your kid. So it's kind of like this road trip movie where he's trying to make his son more like him until he realizes, wait, no, I don't actually want my son to become like this cold killer. And Jude Law is coming for him. Jude Law is gonna, he looks cool, he can do magic tricks, and he's coming to kill him. Does he kill him or does he kill the son? You find out by watching Road to Perdition. It is a great film.
That's awesome. I've never seen that myself, but
I love it.
Yeah.
Sam Mendes, same guy that did Skyfall. Oh, guess nice. That's the Daniel Craig connection.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool. My number 10 is a 2005 little ditty directed by Tarantino, Frank Miller, and Robert Rodriguez, Sin City.
Boom, boom.
That movie. So good. You got such a great cast. Mickey Rourke, Jimmy King, Bruce Willis, Benicio Del Toro, Clive Owen. Oh, my God.
He was great in it.
Yeah.
Loved Clive Owen in that one.
I mean, the Jessica Alba thing could just be like, whatever.
No, Jessica Alba's great. Everyone's great in
that. She was great. She was good in that movie, but like, it wasn't as good as everyone else's.
I disagree. Yeah. Everyone's really good in that movie.
You thought, yeah?
Okay. Yes.
Either way, I love that movie. It's so good. It was a lot of fun to watch.
I think Jessica Alba might be my favorite storyline. Like, I really like the way that character tracks.
Yeah, the Bruce Willis and Jessica Alba storyline, that to me was awesome. He
keeps saving her.
Yeah.
Much fun. Yeah, I disagree. I think she's really good in it.
Mm, I got to revisit my Jessica Alba bias because she's never really just wowed me on screen or anything like that. But that was after I watched Honey.
Yeah, Honey sucks.
No, wait. Yeah, Honey. Honey was awful. The only thing I liked about Honey was that it was shot near my house.
Oh.
At a record store near my house. I'm like, hey, I go to that record store. That's cool. And now it's a GameStop.
Mm, GameStop. So. Yeah, I don't like Honey.
Yeah.
I do like Jessica Alba in Sin City.
Yeah.
The
location that I'm talking about is in the annex at Bluer and Borden. Is right this... at the end of my street.
Wait, that was your 10, right?
That was my 10. Love it. So cool, the noir aspect of it.
Yeah, the second one sucked.
The second one sucked. It was awful.
I don't know if I should say sucked. I saw it once and was like, no, thank you.
Yeah, I didn't like it. But I liked the first one. I also thought
they had a good part with Jessica. She wasn't great the whole time.
Yes.
But they had a good segment with her when she's looking in the mirror or something like that. Mm-hmm. I liked that aspect.
Yeah.
But even something like Joseph Gordon-Levitt being, I'm like, nah, this isn't even good. And I usually like you. But
yeah,
like,
it's true.
Anyway.
I did not think they did well with him in that movie, but that movie just itself didn't do very well.
All right. To me. My number 9, it is from 1997. It is a Malibu Comics film, later Marvel. It is Men in Black.
Shit! I didn't even think about putting Men in Black in this.
Great film.
Oh, man.
What a classic. You give me Independence Day, and then I hear like, oh, Will Smith's doing a movie called Men in Black. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember if I cared about the trailers, but once I saw that movie, I was like, this is the best.
Yeah.
I love it. So good.
So much fun.
Great chemistry with him and Tommy Lee Jones.
Yep.
As we said, either he doesn't want to be there and it's still fun to watch him be there, or or he cares and like it doesn't really matter because he's like... Because he's a grump, like, you're just like, yeah, whatever, man.
Yeah.
Want to be there, don't want to be there. It's the same thing, and it's always good for me.
It's funny because there's this one internet meme that I absolutely love. It's like, it's just photos of Tommy Lee Jones, and it just says, like, why is it that every photo of Tommy Lee Jones looks like his son just told him he wanted to be a professional unicycler? Yes. And I'm like, yep, that's Tommy Lee Jones. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that movie. I can't believe I completely forgot about it and put it in.
Yeah.
No take backs.
Yeah, just like I can't take back for the mask. Shit. Yeah. But yeah, it proves Will Smith is great.
Yeah.
He wasn't a fluke. I mean, I already thought he was from Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
Six Degrees of Separation.
Man. Yeah.
Independence Day. He was in another thing with Whoopi Goldberg and Ted Danson, but I don't remember the name of it right now. And
there's also Bad Boys 1, which I never actually watched.
The one part I remember is that he went to a sperm bank, and I didn't quite understand what was happening. So they're like, did you want to watch porn? I'm like, if you watch porn and go pee, your sperm comes out? Oh, no! I honestly thought he was just there to go pee.
That's funny.
But yeah, I guess I could look it up and bring it up later. Yeah. But yeah, I really like Will Smith in this, and I quote it a lot. Like when the bug is like, you mean like this? And he's pulling up his face.
Oh,
I don't think I quite really caught on to the fact that he was just constantly trying to straighten out his skin suit as a kid, obviously. I caught on later in life. And I was just like, great villain. Like Vincent D'Onofrio, they always say like, oh, what a kingpin. But he is a great cockroach in that movie. It is
he's a very underrated actor.
That I agree with.
The... the scene that I remember most out of that is like when you have like the U.S. Marines and all those like top guys, and then you have the NYPD cop, and they're in that simulator and everything like that, and he just shoots the little girl.
Yes.
Great I love scene. That scene because like was M like the big guy or Zed or whatever yeah, it is. Zed. He's just like, why did Betty Allen Betty whatever have to die? And it's like, and it just how he launches into that whole explanation was the funniest thing in the world to me. And then everyone watching was like, what the hell?
He justifies leaving all the monsters alive. And he's like, what's that white girl doing with those books in this neighborhood?
It's like, she's up to some shit. Those books? Like, no, she's up to something. So she got
that. The movie is called Made in America. I thought that's what it was called, but I was like, no, that's the Jay-Z thing. But yes, it's Made in America. He plays Tea Cake Walters.
Oh, yeah.
What a name. Went to a sperm bank. Hilarious. Anyway. That's my number 9.
Cool. My number 9 is Blade. We've talked extensively about this. I am going to rewatch it again on my DVD. And that movie is sick. It's so good.
It's a great time.
I love it. The only thing, like when Whistler had to kill himself in that movie, I was like, no. And when he brought him back, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I feel like he dies in every movie and then comes back. Maybe not the third one. Maybe in the third one they actually kill him.
Yep.
But I feel like in the second one he also like dies and then comes back.
I think so too.
Either way, I like their relationship and I like that it's not like he's like the white guy that Blade has to defer to. It's like, no, pretty like in that scene, they're like, well, what about Whistler? He's like, he'll take care of himself. Yeah. Like, let's go. We got stuff to do.
Yeah.
I like that. And so that good. When Blade or when Whistler dies, you can see like Blade legitimately cares about that. Yeah. Like, that's someone he legitimately cares for. Yeah. I think they do a good job with that relationship.
Yeah. I will say honorable mention for Blade 3 though.
No.
The funniest scene is when like what's her face? Not Jessica Alba, Jessica Biel.
Yes.
Is like having a breakdown because like her blind friend is dead or something like that because they raided
Natasha Lyonne. Yeah. Yes.
So she's having a breakdown and then Blade's just standing there being like, I don't care. He's probably stoned off his mind right now and just being like, use it. He just keeps saying use it over and over again. I'm like, this was so funny to me. I laughed so hard in the theater and everyone was like, what the hell? I'm like, it was funny. Just use it over and over and over again. But yeah. Blah. But other than that, the rest of that movie is meh.
I don't like talking about it.
Yeah.
Is well, that was your 9, right?
I mean, you see Triple H act for the first time. Well, on film.
Yeah, he's on film for the first time. Maybe. I don't even know if that's true. He might have been in some kind of other thing.
Well, I mean, the whole wrestling.
No, I'm talking about in a movie, though.
No, I think that was his first time.
All right, fair enough. That was your 9?
That was my 9, yeah.
So that takes us to my number 8, a 1992 film from DC. Mm. I think we all know where I'm going with this.
We do.
Batman Returns.
Yes, baby.
People think it's too dark. I find it to be absolutely delightful.
I love how dark it is.
It really scared me as a kid.
Yeah.
I'm glad to report I'm not scared of it anymore. No, the Penguin and Catwoman scared the shit out of me. I was like, you can't kill this woman.
Catwoman.
She just keeps coming back and she looks like paler every time. Blah, no thank you.
Catwoman, that inspired something else in me.
Yeah,
that
no, wasn't I was fear. Just afraid of her.
It was just, oh.
I never wanted to be.
Really hot.
I never wanted to be home alone.
Yeah.
After watching that movie, I'd be like, oh, no, they're coming for me.
Just the way she kills the circus guy by, like, French kissing him with the electric thing.
Oh, Christopher Walken?
Yeah, Christopher Walken. Oh, my God. That was nuts.
I like the idea they had initially for that, but then they kicked him Burton off. But that was supposed to be Harvey Dent.
Yes.
And that would have been how he gets his
two faces. Yep, but they just didn't want to carry Billy
Williams. Well, they didn't want a black person as Two-Face, and they certainly didn't want a black person as Robin. Because Marlon Wayans got the role. He still gets paid for it.
Yep.
But they were like, we will literally pay you forever to not be in this movie because we do not want a black Robin and we do not want a black Two-Face.
That's bullshit.
And the only reason Billy Dee Williams even took it was because he was like, yeah, because then I get to be Two-Face. I'll do your Harvey Dent movie. Let's go. I want to do this.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like that movie. I've heard a lot of people wax poetic about how this movie is more a character study on the three different types of pain. Mm. Obviously, Batman being an addiction, Penguin being rejection, and Catwoman being physical and mental abuse.
Mm.
And just... watching those three people process that pain. One interesting thing I saw was that, like, not saw, I heard on another podcast, Hot Takes with Billy Business, if you want to listen to it. Mm-hmm. He says that it's not something I considered before. I don't even know if I'm completely on board, but he was saying that, like, Bruce Wayne just disappears in this movie because, like, there's a time where, and I remember this, when he says he looks at the story for Penguin initially, and his initial reaction is just, well, I hope he finds his parents or whatever. Mm. And then, like, for the rest of the movie, it's him, like, being Batman, being like, no, fuck that guy. I know, like, yeah. And being like, I can't trust him. But I feel like he's saying he didn't want to be too soft, so he uses the Batman persona. But I feel like what it's really showing you is, yeah, that was his initial reaction. And then as someone who misses their parents, he was like, I don't actually think this guy cares about his parents, and I don't trust him. Like, that's, I feel like that's more what the movie is getting at, is that, yes, there is the element of he's addicted to being Batman, but he's also right. It's not like he's wrong about Penguin. It's not like he, like, makes things worse. He's like, no, this guy, I get the sense that, like, he doesn't care about what he says he cares about.
Mm.
And that's why I have to keep an eye on him. And I thought that was more like a game recognized game situation, yes, and less of a, no, no, no. Like, I can't give in to that one, that side of me. And I have to, it's more like I did. And then once I saw how he treated this opportunity, I was like, nah, he doesn't care. And then he was right. All he was doing was gathering information about everyone else's firstborn so he could steal them later and kill them. And Batman was right.
Yeah.
So Batman's great. Yeah. Anyway, great movie. Love Catwoman in it. Yeah. I feel like she should get more respect.
She should. Definitely.
Yes. Get more and respect. Danny DeVito is legitimately awesome in it.
Oh, God, he's terrible.
When he bites that man's nose, he's very sexual in it.
Yeah.
Even to the point of killing Catwoman for not having sex with him.
Yep.
Blah. Anyway, great he's movie. A true creep. And I was sad when the penguins, like, take him to his death. I was like,
that was so sad, man.
Oh, that's too bad.
When he started bleeding out the cold blood and everything like that, and the penguins, like, carried him off. And he's
just like, I just need a glass of ice water. And you're like, fuck, this guy is dying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. But I feel like Batman has some good stuff, too, in there. Like, when he's driving in the Batmobile and he gets to that alleyway and he's trying to jettison the two sides. And well, now I'm worried. And when he gives Alfred shit about letting Vicky Vale in, like, I know that was just a reaction to people going, you can't let Vicky Vale in the Batcave. And I'm like, who cares? But he makes a point of making fun of Alfred for doing that later. I like that he legitimately likes Catwoman, but, like, they both realize, like, oh, shit, I guess we have to start fighting now that we know who we are. Everything to do with them together, I'm in.
I'm a big fan.
And he even lets her, like, stab him that one time because he's thinking, like, oh, like, she likes me. And she's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
And I was like, nice. Every time I like it.
Yep.
Yeah. He also beats the shit out of her. The Michael Keaton Batman kills. He does not have any qualms with killing.
Yeah.
Because he definitely pushed her to her death. He definitely he definitely pushed Penguin to his death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that guy does. And he definitely pushes Joker to his death.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. When Joker's about to take off, he puts the thing on him and attaches
him to a gargoyle. But doesn't he try to, like, catch him again?
No. He attaches him to a gargoyle, knowing that there's no way he'll get up.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotta watch him again. But, yeah, love it. Solid movie. That makes an appearance later on. That was 8, right?
That was my 8.
My number 8 is a little movie. Again, by Frank Miller. 300. 2006. I loved this movie.
Little Cersei Lannister.
Cersei Lannister, Gerard Butler. Just, oh, God.
Michael Fassbender.
Yep. It's a solid movie, man. I just...
I did not like it.
No?
No. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think I saw it not in a movie theater, which was a big mistake.
Yeah, that'll do it.
And yeah, as I've said to you, not on mic, but multiple times, when people are like this, like when I know what people think of a movie, I would much rather people just plainly tell me the end of a movie, and at least then I can be like, oh, let's see, like, let's see how they built to that. But if I am told ahead of time, this movie's great, I love it, or this movie sucks, I'm gonna go in and try and disprove it.
Yeah, you that's don't not, like. I'm not saying like that's normal. Set on you.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's normal. I'm not saying I'm right for that. It's just how I am. I will try to disprove whatever someone tells me going into it, unless I already want to believe what they're saying.
Right.
But I just feel like it messes with my experience, and that's exactly happened with 300. Everyone told the best. It's so good.
Yeah, that would, like, that would, and I was definitely just,
and I admit I should have seen it in theaters, but I didn't. I wasn't able to see it in theaters. And so when I saw it, I was just like, meh, it's fine. I'm not mad at this at all.
Right. No, I get what you mean, and I completely agree. I don't like having my expectations done in a certain way. So I won't ask if someone liked it. I'm just like, oh, you watched it, cool, and try to change the subject as fast as possible, because I'm like, no, I want to see it, and then we can engage in dialogue. But I don't want to hear like, oh, you thought it was the best movie in the world, now I have to think less of you if I don't think.
I don't care about the person. It's more just like me being like, well, it's not the best movie because this happened or this happened, or it's not that bad because this happened or this happened.
I just think visually that's a really, really cool movie. It was just like, just
that was Zack Snyder, though.
Was Snyder?
It? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a Snyder directed by a Frank Miller comic.
Yeah.
Is what I meant. Not Frank Miller directing it. But 300. Not the second 300, which was less good. Still fun.
That was a prequel, sequel, and sidequel.
Correct.
With Eva Green in it.
Yes. And sex. I'm a big fan of Eva Green. And loved 300. There was just so much that was to love in that movie for me.
I wish I saw it in theaters. I'm never going to revisit it. I like the cast.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, even Dominic West is in it. Yes. Oh, yeah, McNulty. All right. That was your 8?
That was my 8.
Time for my 7. Let's jump all the way back to 2002. A Marvel film.
Ooh.
Our good friend Spider-Man.
Yep.
Sam Raimi's first Spider-Man movie. Really well done.
Yep.
I really believed that Peter Parker was a big dumb loser. And I was really happy when he got some powers and wasn't a big dumb loser. It really worked the first time I watched it. I don't have anything bad to say. It's really well made.
It's a fantastic movie. It really, really is good.
It's a different take, but that doesn't make it a worse take than what they're doing with this Peter Parker. Or this Spider-Man.
Yep.
We can all agree it's better than the Amazing Spider-Man films.
I believe so. I would find it hard to find someone saying...
Oh, there's someone.
I'm sure
if we put it out there, someone's like, yes!
We actually do know someone that thinks the Amazing Spider-Man was better than the...
Original.
Spider-Man. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, we do. But, I mean, to each is their own, right? But I'm a big fan of the Spider-Man movie. I didn't put that on my list because another one in that trilogy pops up. I'm pretty sure
I felt no qualms about putting multiple movies from a franchise.
I wanted to be as original as possible to this, so that's why I did the thing I did. My number 7 is V for Vendetta. We've all heard what I've had to say about that. Love that movie so much. Hugo Weaving in it is awesome. For a character, for an actor to be able to express emotion through a mask without any movement whatsoever is incredible to
me. He is using movement, it's just not using face movement.
What I mean is face movement.
Yes.
Yeah, like him to express
it's that, all, it is all through how he's moving his hands and the rest of his body.
Correct.
What I did find out as I was rewatching it, just to make sure it was going to make the list, which it shouldn't have, it should have been the mask, but when I was rewatching it, I read that it was James Purfoy that actually was cast first.
Oh, yeah?
And so there's scenes where it's James Purfoy and they just used Hugo Weaving in his voice. And I'm like, interesting. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't ever, because you never see his face. So, like, I mean, there is a scene where he, like, goes and goads the cops. And it's clearly Hugo Weaving with some prosthetics on him, but it's Hugo Weaving.
Yep.
So that's probably not the James Purfoy part. But like when he's got the mask on. So it's interesting that that's the product of two performances and you still don't feel that, like it's not something that you would know unless you read that.
Yeah.
Like you're not like, huh, he seems different somehow. Right. Like you're just like, that's V. That's the whole thing. Hmm. Like obviously it helps that he's wearing a mask the whole time. Mm-hmm. But V is the saving grace of that film for me.
Yep. That movie is absolutely fantastic. Now on to number 6.
Yeah.
Oh, I just immediately broke my rule.
Of what?
Of trying to keep it not franchise.
Oh. All right. Well, my number 6 is Sin City.
Ooh,
what nice. An excellent film. Yeah. Visually, it made me like Mickey Rourke more.
Yep.
That was before The Wrestler. Yes, it obviously
was. The Wrestler way before like The Wrestler. Yeah.
3 years. Yeah. Because he did that, and I was like, all right, Mickey Rourke, back at it. Like,
yeah.
Great character, Marv.
Mm-hmm.
I was a big Clive Owen fan at the time, so I liked his Dwight stuff.
Yes.
With Brittany Murphy, who mm-hmm. passed before yep. we could do another one. But, I thought it was really well made, and... Benicio del Toro has that cool scene.
Yeah, he's got that great scene.
It is crazy. I mean, yeah, as we talk about it, like, we're usually, I think both of us are making effort not to be like, I liked Batman and Spider-Man. Like this, and
yeah, so
this
we're trying to really diversify.
And this character, this is just a bunch of characters that only really exist here. They don't mm-hmm. really cross over anywhere else. And it's a universe unto itself.
Yes.
Like you can just jump around and see all the different cities, stories. And I probably wouldn't normally like that, but I felt that they actually pulled it off here.
Mm.
And it was great. And yes, Jessica Alba's great.
Yep.
I will rewatch it to make sure, but my memory was she's actually like doing a good job here.
Gotcha.
Just like everyone else.
Yep. All right. My number 6 is Blade 2.
Wow.
Because I loved Blade 2.
Get some good Guillermo del Toro stuff.
Yep. That's exactly
ninjas,
it.
Ninjas.
Guillermo. Yeah. It was a
and
solid
what's
movie.
His face is in it, right? Ron Perlman.
Yeah, Ron Perlman's in it. Just like
who's the bad guy for sure. Like yeah. You're just like, oh man, when Blade has to fight him, it's gonna be great.
It's sick. It's so good. But Blade 2 was so good to me. I just loved it. It was I'm gonna watch Blade pretty soon. But, yeah, that's a solid movie to me. Number 5.
Speaking of Ron Perlman, a 2004 film from Dark Horse.
Yep.
The incredible Hellboy.
Yep.
Not, obviously, for obvious reasons, not the one that just came out.
Not the David
Harbour
one. And
not the sequel, because that's also in 2008 and ineligible. But I do like this one way better than the sequel, and obviously I like it better than the 2019 mm-hmm. one that you can listen to our thoughts on that.
Yep.
We did an episode. Again, a character that I didn't really know of, didn't have any kind of thing from the comics. I just was like, why don't I go watch this movie? Mm. Like, what else do I got to do? And I was like, this movie has swept me off my feet. What a class act this character is. I love the world he's in. He just wants to save some cats and like impress his dad. He's got a sweet tooth. He's kind of insecure about his horns. And so, and like, I liked the parallel of he's like a teenage boy because he's like shaving and he doesn't want to have that awkward, I mean, I know they're horns, but like that awkward like stash when you hit puberty. And there's that somewhat unrequited love from Liz.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's Selma Blair, but I never really remember the character name.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Anyway.
I just remember Selma Blair.
I thought their chemistry was good. It would really break my heart if I found out they didn't like each other.
Yeah.
The whole team was great. I even liked the guy that they came in only because he was used to make Hellboy jealous when he tries to take Liz on a date. I love that scene in particular was what really won me over when I was like, look at how petty this guy is. Throwing rocks at them. Like, I love this character. What a great time at the movies. And I understand that that probably wasn't what the comic book fans came for, but it worked for me. I really liked his relationship with his dad, how he saved him and was like kind of forced to be. It's Liz Sherman. But I thought, what a great time in the movies. I'm a big fan of Hellboy.
Yeah. My number five is Batman Returns.
Didn't realize how much you liked that.
I love that movie, man. I love dark movies, and that is a hugely dark movie.
To be fair, if you rewatch it, it's pretty cartoonish and
silly. I'm pretty sure now, yes. But like at the time, when it was released, like 92 or something like
that? Well, I just don't want people being like, I can't believe Ben thinks it's so dark and moody. I'm just saying, yes. Yeah. As a kid, yes, it was very dark. Obviously.
I'm sure if I were to rewatch this whole list, I'd have differing opinions about a couple of these movies.
I tried to rewatch as much as possible. There's certain ones where I'm like, no, I just know I like this movie this much. But I had to rewatch V for Vendetta. Mm. I did have to rewatch Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a couple I had to be like, well, let me go back there.
Yeah. Got to revisit that shit. Just to see if it defends, but...
Oh, and Ninja
Turtles. I'm going off memory here.
Yeah.
Don't have the time to do it. But yeah, Batman Returns. Love that movie.
Yeah,
it's a great time. For some reason, loved the Batboat.
You what?
I loved the Batboat.
Yeah, it's great. That's one of Kevin Smith's favorite moments is when he's in the Batboat and they shoot a missile at him.
Yeah.
And he just looks at it like, what the fuck am I getting into here? He's having a lot of fun in that role. Or so I don't know if he's having a lot of fun. It seems like Michael Keaton is having fun. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like he's being weird with Batman, and I like it.
There is some weirdness. I forget if it's Batman or Batman Returns where he just kind of, like, does that weird, like, I can't turn my head, so I have to turn my whole upper body to give you a thumbs up. That's Batman Forever. Oh, shit.
I like Batman Forever, but yeah, that was Batman Forever.
Yeah.
Another thing from that Hot Takes podcast was, I forgot about it, but I did appreciate this too. And there's two Penguin lines that I really like. Mm-hmm. There's one where Batman tries to stop him and he's like, what do you want? And Penguin's like, oh, the direct approach. I love that in a man in a mask. And I'm like, nice. Fucking get him, Penguin.
Yeah.
You really made him look like a hypocrite. And then there's another one where he jumps out from behind and tries to fight Batman. And he's like, you're just jealous because I was born a freak and you have to dress up to be one. Mm. And then Batman actually goes, you might be right about that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, see, look, that's some nice stuff there. Yeah. That he's just like, I mean, maybe, yeah, I kind of am jealous of you.
I just like the idea of how, even back then, you saw through a movie how someone could manipulate politics and all that kind of stuff to be like, oh, I'm running for this office and all that kind of, I'm going to manipulate things, and it was fun for me to watch.
People say they don't like when Penguin tries to become mayor, but...
Who cares?
I like it.
I like it.
I think that's a cool way of doing things.
Yeah. I mean, Penguin tries to control his own thing in every single Batman thing anyways. Yeah. The gangster world and everything like that. It makes sense for him.
I mean, this movie, it's hard because he is literally, from the beginning, positioned as a freak.
Correct.
But in the comics, he doesn't see himself as a freak, and he would even be insulted if he got sent to Arkham Asylum. He thinks if he is going to go away, it's just to Blackgate. He shouldn't be mixed in with Joker and Two-Face. He feels like he's better than them. So his schemes would be I'm going to be mayor or something. And then, anyway. Because
he's truly organized crime versus other people are just no, I'm crime for crime's sake for the most part or doing whatever.
Yeah. I mean, he's not the Joker.
He's not the Joker. Yeah. Joker's crime for crime's sake. But it's a solid movie. And also that's where you got the really, really cool circus goons. That were
was it the Red Triangle or something?
I forgot what it was, but the circus or whatever it was with the Christopher Walken people, those clowns.
You're
with the giant
conflating two things.
Like that.
Christopher Walken has nothing to do with the circus. He is just a businessman.
I think I'm remembering this completely wrong then.
Yeah. I remember you said when she does that thing to the circus person, I'm like, what? Christopher Walken is just a businessman.
Right,
so
right.
So he needs to, so he pushes...
He
gets kidnapped by the circus.
He gets kidnapped,
but he's not
and then
part
gets
of the circus.
Put in that lion tamer outfit, right?
No. He just gets put in a cage with a monkey.
Oh, right.
But yeah, he's not part of it. He didn't support Penguin the way Penguin thought he would. So then Penguin's like, well, then fuck you.
Right.
But gotcha. He's not a circus guy.
Yeah, no, I just love the visuals of the clowns. And the goons that they had from the circus. It was so cool.
And that woman with the dog.
Yeah.
Because when Batman tries to use the remote batarang and the dog just takes it out of the air and she's just like, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Fuck
that
you.
Was cool. Yeah.
I'm out.
I liked it.
And then when she finally leaves, when she's kind of just like, bye, Oswald, and like even like some of the clowns are like kind of like cartwheeling away, like, bye, and he's like, what? No, no, you got to stay with me. I was like, oh, everyone's abandoning him.
Yeah.
Just like his parents.
Except PB for the Herman. Penguins.
Yeah. Penguins. Well, yeah, they're there for him, but.
Yeah, they're there.
How smart are they?
Number four.
It's a 2003 film from Marvel. X2.
Oh, we got the same number four.
What? I mean, realistically, what I'm thinking of is how much I like that they have to work together for a bit with Magneto.
Yeah.
But on top of that, it's when Wolverine legitimately like stabs someone in the chest with his blades, and I'm like, oh, they're going for it now, baby. great time.
Yep.
I really think that is, I mean, of the ones available to me,
yeah,
great for the time.
It's it's absolutely a great film. I just like the idea. It's like, wait, you're a professor at our school? What do you teach? And he just goes like, art. That was it. And like, nobody believes him at all. It was a fun movie. And just like the Bobby Iceman's brother betraying them and calling the cops and everything like that. That was a great scene.
And Brian Cox's Striker is amazing.
Yeah.
Also, there's Lady Deathstrike that I've completely forgot about.
Yeah, right, the Lady Deathstrike scene is awesome.
Yeah. Great movie.
So good. And then, like, just the idea of him being, like, the William Stryker thing at the end, where he's like, if you let me die, you'll never find out where you're from. And then he just makes his options, like, that's okay, I'm good with these people kind of deal. Like, that was a great moment, because, like, in still one, he still wants to, like, leave and do his things. But, like, in two, he's like, no, I'm part of this now. I'm good. I'm happy here. I found my people. I love that movie. It's so much fun. And before they whole screw it all up with a whole Phoenix subplot and Last Stand.
Yeah, whatever.
But, yeah, whatever. But, yeah, X-Men 2 was just phenomenally good as a movie.
I feel like I should have it higher up. Well, it is what it is.
Well, it depends what your top three is. Or really, it doesn't, like, because you don't need to justify anything.
No, I feel like I would switch it with my three, but I'm not, because my list is my list.
Gotcha. What's your number three?
It's a 2005 film.
Yeah.
From DC. It is Batman Begins.
Nice. Three, really?
Yes, really.
Oh, wow.
Not The Dark Knight.
Well, that's fair, but still. Yeah.
It's good. It's obviously really good if it's at number three, even though unofficially it's at my number four.
Right. I'm curious what your number one was. I thought that would be your number one for sure.
I think they did a great job creating their own little thing for Batman.
Mm-hmm.
It's the saving grace of Dark Knight Rises is how much Dark Knight Rises ties back into Batman Begins.
Yes.
That's the only reason for me, I'm not saying for everyone, that I'm like, wow, that was really well done. You pulled it off. Is because Batman Begins really sets up exactly the mission statement for those three movies.
Mm-hmm.
They did a good job of being like, well, here's our Batman. This is how he's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that fucking Batmobile sucks. But then, you know, they won me over.
The Tumblr.
Yeah. Blech. It's no.
I mean, it made sense to me. But
I do not like the character of Rachel Dawes. At first, I thought it was
Rachel Dawes is like.
At first, I thought it was just Katie Holmes. But then, even when Maggie Gyllenhaal, who I like a lot more, did it, I was still like, I'm glad she's dead. What a bummer of a character. She's really constantly giving him shit. And I'm supposed to believe this guy loves her beyond reason. Like, he's going to give up Batman for her. And all she does is make him feel bad about his choices or be like, well, I can't be with you because I fundamentally do not like who you are.
Yes.
And I'm supposed to like be like, I hope he gets with her then. He pretty much begged me to hope she was going to like die or something.
Yeah. The Rachel Dawes thing was not
fake. She's especially not good in Batman Begins.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I was like, ugh. Anyway, Michael Caine is Alfred. Amazing.
Amazing. So good.
And definitely the first time I've cared about Commissioner Gordon in a film.
Yes. Yeah. Gary Oldman as Commissioner Gordon is awesome. So good.
Again, so back to like what Christopher Nolan said about Superman. Like having that, like where like, I mean, my personal stuff with he owes me money. My personal stuff with Morgan Freeman aside, like the fact that he can just be like the guy that comes off the bench on in that like roster. You're just like, yeah, like he made a point to like make sure that all the characters had like a noteworthy person attached to them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really thought they did a good job of again taking it seriously. I would argue too seriously for my taste, but still, they took it seriously and made a proper film that encourage you to jump in. And I know even people think this is better than Dark Knight.
Right.
So it's not without its charms.
Mm, gotcha. My number three is a little ditty called Spider-Man 2.
We have this... No, we don't. No.
We don't have the same number three?
No, we don't.
No, never mind.
Because I just said my number three.
Yeah, you just said number three. Spider-Man 2 is awesome to me. It's so much fun. You really get into the issues that Peter Parker specifically faces, being like poor as well as a superhero and all that kind of stuff. And the whole like, the fact that people are like offering to help him and everything. And the fact that Mary Jane Watson's with Harry Osborn in this one. It really, really...
She isn't.
What?
No. She's with J. Jonah Jameson's son.
That's what it is. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's late.
Yeah.
For the record, it's 10:45. Yeah. We're recording this Thursday, and I had a full day's worth of work.
Yeah, so Harry Osborn is actually encouraging Peter to be with...
Yes. Yes, he is.
Mary Jane in this
yeah.
movie.
Yeah, this movie's a lot of fun. The whole Alfred Molina, Dr. Octopus thing was so good to me. I loved it. Even and because it's Sam Raimi who started out in horror, he threw so many horror elements into this that especially makes this so much more fun. Yes,
yeah.
the limbs and everything like that. And no, there's so many elements of in that scene just alone, the arms just being like a horror element. I loved it. It was so much fun. And just like the whole nuclear fusion thing and this movie was awesome. So good.
My number two is Spider-Man 2.
Okay.
That was my confusion.
Gotcha.
Yeah, boy, did it deliver. That was a case where I was a camp counselor, so I couldn't see it when I wanted to, but all the kids that I was counseling had seen it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, is it good? And they're like, it's so good, man. And they're like, I don't know what that says, that those 8-year-olds' opinions really matter to me. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I mean, if they're saying it's good, it's probably really good. And it did not disappoint. What a great time. It gave me everything I want. I was like, finally, he can be with MJ. Mm-hmm. I was tired of him being like, no, I can't. I was like, no, just come on.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, it's time someone saved you. And she says the go get him tiger stuff. And I was like, this is what I wanted.
Yeah.
In addition to Alfred Molina being a great Dr. Octopus.
Yeah.
Yep. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
What else did I like? Oh, no, that's the first one. Never mind. I was going to say J. Jonah Jameson has a good part, but that was the first movie where he doesn't give Peter Parker up to the Green Goblin. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's a decent man right there. Yeah, it's that's all I have to say. I liked it a lot.
My number two is The Crow, 1994. Brandon Lee.
I was like, oh man.
You're waiting for that to come up on here, eh?
Yeah.
That, I love this movie.
Didn't see it, so I can't really join
it. It's so good. It's like definitely a B-level movie, but it's just so good. And I love the original comic by James O'Barr. Every sequel that came after it was an absolute dumpster fire. Like, do not watch them, except just to be like, oh, okay, yeah, that's funny. There's this one with Eddie Furlong that's not good at all. But this, the 1994 Crow, was so well done. I loved it. T-Bird, okay. They got all the gangsters in, and just it was just awesome. They didn't go as dark as they could have into the, because the comic book was so much darker. Because this was one shot where one of the guys that he kills is just like, okay, he in the comics, he's like, okay, he rats out. He's like, okay, if I tell you where everyone else is, will you give me mercy? He's like, yes. And then his mercy is like, okay, here's the morphine. Do all of it. And so he gets him to overdose and everything like that. And then while he's doing that, the crow just writes in his blood on the wall, I know why Jesus wept. And it was like the coolest visual ever. And it's just absolutely nuts. But they didn't do that in this movie because they chose to focus a little bit more of the attention on the kid that comes out of nowhere. But it's a fun movie. It's a fun, fun movie. I love it a lot.
Maybe I'll see it. Yeah. Maybe I won't.
I highly recommend you do. It's really, really good. And just the whole aspect of him being like, no, I came back. I've got to undo these wrongs and so I can be at peace with my fiance. That was really, really fun.
All right.
Yeah. Love this movie. All right. Now we're down to the number one position, both you and me.
It's a 1989 film.
Yeah.
From DC Comics.
I wonder what it is.
Obviously, wonder. Batman.
Batman! The original Batman. Yeah, my number one is Batman Begins.
Yes. Yeah. Now, Batman is clearly superior. Yep. Why? Because Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton are really getting into it with their characters.
They're fantastic.
I mean, I get that Batman Begins is probably more faithful to the comics, yes, even to the point of actually having Joe Chill kill the Waynes, but I kind of was like,
you're okay with the joke?
Like, thing, I was, right? Like, I mean, I know it came out in 89, but I was like 4 or 5 when I actually got to see it, because right, my parents were like, well, you're not gonna just watch this.
Well, yeah, you're 3 years
old. Yeah, so 4 or 5 when I saw it, so that obviously plays a big thing, mm-hmm, into it. But this is another movie I rewatched and I was like, I think I might like it better than when I was a kid. Like, this is great. Joker is such a great performance in this. Yep. I mean, not to be like, it's not like Michael Keaton is overshadowed. Like, he's doing some great, like, the like absolute animosity he has for Joker is great. Like, anytime he's coming, like, the way that he beats the shit out of him for like the last 5 minutes, it's not like other movies where he kind of just is like, oh, I don't have to kill you, but I don't have to save you. It's right. Like, no, I'm gonna keep punching you because you killed my parents.
Yes,
I do not like you. There's nothing you could say. And like, Joker's trying everything. He's like, oh, you say I made you, but you made me. Come on, how childish could you get? And he just keeps punching him. Yep. And like, just the way he delivers his lines, like, you killed my parents, like, you did this.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, here we go. Like, this guy is going to kill him. Like, he's going to get the revenge he wants.
Yeah.
And like, he doesn't care about Vicky Vale anymore. He's just like, I am going to murder you. Yeah. Like, I hate you.
Yeah, he straight up just goes ape shit.
Or when he does the, you want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts. I'm like, wow, is that an ad lib? Like, I can't imagine that was in the script. Yeah. But like, just shows that like, they were dialed in to what they wanted to do with those characters. And I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Heavily.
Yeah, that the issue I have with that movie is the fact that they pinned the death squarely on the Joker. I really didn't like that, because to me, if Batman's whole motive was to get revenge, because that's what it kind of sets it up for, then it's kind of like, okay, why would there be a sequel? If you've killed the Joker, you've identified the person that did it, you've got your revenge, why keep going? I like the idea that in Batman Begins, it's more faithful to the actual comic because Joe Chill did it. Well, Joe Chill's a product of crime. It's crime that kills Batman's parents. And Batman's vendetta isn't after one specific person, it's after crime in general.
Yeah, but it's not, the vendetta wasn't against Joker in particular. He was just like, oh, now I'm gonna get him, like, now I know who he is.
Yes,
I'm gonna get him. But that wasn't his thing. And actually, it tracks, because in the second movie, he's not worried about like the pain that the death of his parents caused them. He's just like, oh, I'm just gonna save my city. Like, it's actually the only one in that series that doesn't mention the death of his parents. Because then Batman Forever is like, hey, like, is it okay that I'm not that sad about my parents anymore dying? And like, how do I justify still doing this? But I think it actually tracks for what they wanted, that the Joker did it. Because then, because that's kind of like the Spider-Man thing of like, you get the revenge against the person you're doing, but then you realize, well, there's still
this whole area.
I mean, yes, for Batman it is. You're never going to fill that hole. But just in general, I feel like if we are going with that addiction thing, like, yeah that might have been an excuse the first time around, but you he's also realize, excuse, I still want to do it. Up,
I 100% will say that one of the coolest lines ever comes from that movie.
Never rub another man's rhubarb.
No.
Got it. Yeah, that's absolutely the one.
It's the it's when he goes like, tell me, have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight? Light? Yeah. That is the coolest line. It's so creepy.
I like the way he delivers it. I don't think it's actually a cool line.
No, I think it's a cool line. It's just one of those things where I've actually, like, when I was more troubled and, like, in my darker days, I've had images of, like, beating people up and before the final punch to lay them out, be like, have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight, and just, like, clock them out. And, like, that was an angry kid, man. There was a lot of bullying bent towards me. Figure that shit out now. Don't want to do it, but that's a cool line of dialogue. It's awesome.
It's a well-delivered line.
Yes, it is.
I will give you that. Yeah. I don't know if it's the coolest line he said.
Oh, I think it's the coolest line.
I really think this town needs an enema is very cool. Mm. Way do they get a load of me is pretty cool.
100% agree. That parade scene
is and so much Batman? Fun. He's at home watching his tight. Yeah, man. Like, he's got, like, money. Yeah. Who
and
do you trust?
He pulls out that giant gun from his pants. It's like so
which
funny.
Dark Knight recreates.
Yeah.
So that's also why I'm like, yeah, man. Like, Christopher Nolan had his eye on those movies.
Yeah.
That whole, like, him bringing out the gun and shooting at Batman as he drives at him.
Directly at him.
Is exactly. I mean, not the exactly. It's thing. Actually more grounded, but it's the same idea.
Yeah.
Batman coming at the Joker and being like, well, I'm not going to actually kill him, even though. Right. The Michael Keaton Batman probably was just like, nah, I'm missing. That's too bad. I really want to kill this guy.
But I mean, that's the perfect line in The Dark Knight that references that. It's like, this is what happens when you have an immovable object beat an unstoppable force. It's perfectly summed up in that motorcycle scene where he's like, nope, I'm just going to stand right here and call you on your bluff. You're not going to kill me. That was awesome.
Yeah.
It's great. So good.
Also, I feel like in that movie, Joker legitimately has death wish. Like, he says, I want you to kill me.
Yeah.
And also, when Batman grabs him up from when he's falling, he's like, oh, my, that was disappointing. Because he was kind of like, yeah, he did it.
All
right. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, that's all. Yeah. Now we're just talking about Batman Begins. All he wanted to do was just, like, corrupt him. That's all he wanted.
Let's talk about Batman Begins. Yeah. Batman Begins.
Loved this movie. It was so good. Everything about it made sense to me. And it was just like, to me, now, the one thing about the Batman, the 89 Batman, the other thing I didn't like is that I always saw Bruce Wayne and Batman as two separate characters. Mm-hmm. But when Michael Keaton is Bruce Wayne, granted, there's not that many scenes in it where he gets to be the millionaire playboy thing. He just ends up being very melancholy the whole time.
You gotta rewatch it. He's not melancholy at all. He's actually having a lot of fun. There's the scene where he meets Vicki Vale and he's so, like, into her that, she's like, hey, like, have you seen Bruce Wayne around? He's like, no, I don't know who that is.
Mm.
And then, like, later sneaks in on while she's talking shit about him, being like, oh, I would know, I'm Bruce Wayne. And, like, he's having fun. He's not melancholy at all in that movie. He's actually just kind of like this dweeb that's like, oh, like, all right. Or, like, yeah, like, he's just not melancholy.
I don't know. I just like the way that Christian Bale played up the millionaire playboy a lot.
That's
better.
Fair, but I like Michael Keaton's approach of he's bored with that.
Right.
He doesn't actually, like, he's not, like, he doesn't even care to, like, look like he's having fun, but he's having fun in his own way.
Right.
He's having fun fucking with people's expectations of, like, playing up, like, oh, yeah, I must be a crazy millionaire, right? Like, I must be.
Yeah.
Or I must be, like, Howard Hughes hiding in my mansion. But he's bored, which is different to Christian
and
Bale's
that,
being forced to play up the playboy thing because Alfred's pushing him.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is, like, that's the thing I love about Batman Begins is how much time they spend building him up, because that doesn't really get explored the same way in Batman.
No.
The idea of, like, okay, well, we're going to go through the training, the Ra's al Ghul thing, the League of Shadows, and all that kind of stuff, but also when he comes back to Gotham, Alfred continues his training. It's like, listen, you better have a good reason for those bruises if you're going to continue doing this thing. Maybe, like, you should take up this or whatever. And it's just like, what else do millionaire playboys do? And just, like, coaching him along the way is like, no, you have to have a public persona. You can't just beat people up at nighttime just because you want to and not have any presence whatsoever. You're Bruce Wayne. you mean something to this city.
There's no doubt that Tim Burton did not actually care about Batman.
No, Tim Burton didn't read a Batman comic before in his life.
No, I mean more he cared about the villains. Like that's
who he definitely that's cared who about,
cared about. But and yes, you're right, he didn't read any of that. I think he just read Dark Knight Returns. But like I think even to that point, the fact that you still well, I still like Batman's performance in it says a lot.
It does say a lot because without a doubt you're the person I know that loves Batman the most.
He like because he's like he is different when he's Batman than when he's Bruce Wayne. He's
just there's not saying he's
different. Just not playing like a bimbo. Like,
that's which, what I wanted though. Yeah. I wanted the bimbo playboy thing, that imagery.
Did you know you wanted that when you were?
I didn't. Well, it's not something I knew I wanted until I saw it in. Like in all fairness, that's a retroactive opinion.
As we said, there's no wrong answers. Yeah. But I would submit that. That's kind of what makes Batman good. There's a bunch of different takes.
Yes. Yes.
That work.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. Top 15 superhero movies between Dan and Ben. Daniel and Ben before 2008.
Yeah. Our favorite ones.
Yep.
So, yeah, if you want more great content like this, go to thatshelf.com. You'll find our podcast. You can listen to other episodes like our Hellboy one or the Comic-Con one. We've also got things like Black Hole Films, Bad Gay Movies, Highly movies, Logical, Composers.
Matrivonis, which had its season finale.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can still listen to it, but there's not going to be any new ones till 2020.
Yep.
Yeah. You know what? Give a good listen to No Budget Nightmares because they got a great theme song.
Yeah.
And there's other podcasts, but you just got to go to thatshelf.com and go to the podcast section and. You know, enjoy the other great podcasts on this podcast network. And if you want to listen to more than what's on that shelf, go to tdfeverything.com/spoiledrotten, where you'll find the rest of our episodes. You'll also find Ben's social media, my social media. You'll find ways to review, rate, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Radio Public, Google Play. Those are the only options there, but I'm sure you can find them on whatever podcast
you're listening to. You do your like, subscribe, listen, rate.
Sharing.
Share, expose us to the world. If you like us, of course, if you see fit.
Expose us to the world no matter what. Even if you want to go, these guys are idiots. There might be someone like me that'd be like, I'm going to listen to that and prove why they're not idiots.
Yep. Do it.
All right.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
This has been a TDF Everything production, bruh.